Okay, so today's our last. Tomorrow's the last day of Chanukah. We're lighting our last candles tonight. So I want to discuss one final Chanukah idea, kind of a parting idea about Chanukah. It really speaks very much to what the final day of Chanukah is all about. You know, tonight is the eighth candle. Different commentaries refer to the last day of Chanukah as Vezos Chanukah, which means this is Chanukah. I mean, the essence of Chanukah is seen through the final day of Chanukah. That comes from the idea that the part of the Torah that we read on the last day of Chanukah begins Vezos Chanukas HaMizbeach. This is the dedication of the altar. But from there we see the term used Vezos Chanukah. So, as if to say the final day of Chanukah becomes, you know, the essence of what Chanukah is all about. So, besides the fact that we've been, you know, reflecting on the ideas of Chanukah for 8 days, and that Chanukah, when we light the eight candles, we see the entire menorah itself is lit. That's a very powerful sight. But beyond that, there's something about the day itself, the eighth day, which means this is what Chanukah is all about. So I'm going to try to discuss. There's many ideas discussed about why the eighth day is considered the essence of Chanukah. I want to discuss one idea. And I guess the simple understanding is the following. It's that the miracle of Chanukah, of the 8 days of the oil burning, was at its greatest on the eighth day. I mean, we had one jug of oil. It's supposed to last one day, lasted 8 days. So every day the miracle became greater because it wasn't expected to burn today, and it's still going, it's still going, it's still going. Finally, the eighth day, it's still going. So being that on the eighth day we see the miracle at its most powerful form, so that kind of means it's the essence of Chanukah. The concept of the miracles of Chanukah is so powerful. Additionally, you know, every holiday or every Shabbos, there should be a build-up. You know, if we've been reflecting upon ideas for 8 days straight, so we should feel the most intense connection to the holiday on the last day. It's actually funny, because typically we feel most excited on the first day. It's the first day, we've been waiting for this, you know, it's fresh, it's new. But if we celebrate properly, really the last day should be the most powerful, because I've been spending all this time focusing on the ideas of Chanukah. The same thing, you know, Pesach, the 7 days, looked at as a very powerful day. On Shabbos, the time of Shalosh Shittos, the third meal is supposed to be the highest point of Shabbos. Now, for many of us, it's the hardest point of Shabbos. You know, Shabbos has been a long day, we're tired, Shabbos is almost over. But many, many commentaries describe that the end of Shabbos is the most powerful time of Shabbos, because you've had a whole Shabbos now. You've been in the atmosphere of Shabbos for almost 24 hours. So now you should feel the most connected and most intensely inspired by Shabbos. You know, Yom Kippur, the most powerful moments are Ne'ilah, those final moments. You've spent 24 hours fasting, Ne'ilah comes in, and it's a very powerful time. Because on the one hand, you know, the tefillos of Ne'ilah are very powerful. On the other hand, we've been sitting in Yom Kippur for so long. Yom Kippur has now taken its effect upon us in a good sense, in a spiritual way. So Chanukah as well, the eighth day should be a very, very intense day of understanding Chanukah. So many explanations are given for this, but I want to give one other explanation of why the eighth day is so powerful. So I'd like to label this concept in the email. If anyone saw the email, it said the 6, 7, and 8 of Chanukah. Right? I don't mean the days, I mean the numbers. We'll talk about what that means in a second. But I want to show how Chanukah has within it connections to the number 6, the number 7, and the number 8. And you'll see what I mean as we go on. So to put that aside for a second, and let's talk about another idea, and we'll bring it back in a few minutes to understand how the numbers connect. Now, we've discussed a few times already that Chanukah is viewed as an approach of how to view the world. Meaning the Greeks come from a certain philosophy, the Jews from another philosophy, and those two philosophies can clash at times. And as we mentioned in the past few weeks, one of the main elements of this clash is how one views the world of science and nature from a Torah perspective. The Greeks view it in one way, the Jews view it in a different way. So how do those two different philosophies, you know, work together? How do they clash, and how do they fit? So with that in mind, I think there's four different approaches one can take to understanding nature. And we'll see how one of them is the ancient Greek approach, which really is where the atheistic scientist will come in, is that approach. And then there are three other approaches, which are more from Torah lenses, and each one a little bit deeper, a little more profound. So I want to go through these approaches, and then we'll see how it links together. Furthermore, we know that the Greeks came out against the Jews and decreed against many, many mitzvos. The three famous ones, the most often quoted ones, they decreed against Shabbos, so we shouldn't keep Shabbos, against Bris Milah, and against Rosh Chodesh. They didn't want us to actually sanctify the new month. Those are the main three. Those are found in Megillas Antiochus is the source for those. And those are the main three things we find that the Greeks had to decree against the Jews. So it must be that those three really got on the nerves of the Greeks, that those mitzvos really upset them. They felt those mitzvos opposed what they stood for and what they were all about. So the question is why? I mean, the Torah has 613 mitzvos. There's another 610 out there they could have decreed against. Why are those three the ones they picked on? And we'll have to figure out how that all fits in. So let's think about how the Greeks viewed the world of nature, and then we'll show how the Torah can be the world of nature. The way that the early commentaries describe, they have a term they call Olam Kadmon, which means that what came first, the world or God? And what that means is that, do you view the laws of nature as immutable? Is science a set established fact, then God could fit into that picture? Or do you say, no, that God is eternal, and God makes the laws of nature? So for instance, in our minds, 2 + 2 = 4. In our minds, we say that is irrefutable. That's a fact, it's objective fact, it's scientific, it's mathematic, and no one could dispute that. And that's the scientific approach, and from our world, that makes a lot of sense. It's true. Now, we'd say that the circumference of a circle is pi r squared, right? So that's an irrefutable mathematic fact. It's tried and tested and proven. We'd say, how can a world that's not true?
Not pi.
Did I say backwards?
2 pi r.
That's the area. I'm sorry. Okay, I confused it. Thank you. 2 pi r. Thank you very much. 2 pi r. Pi r squared is the area of a circle, right? Okay, we got it backwards. Fine. 2 pi r. The area is pi r squared. But again, we would say that that's something which is a truth, it's eternal, and that can't change. That's a scientific, irrefutable fact. The idea of time, time in our minds is something which just is, and we can't understand a world without time. Time just is, and it goes on. We can't understand what it means to live without time being part of the factor. So the question is, are the laws of nature absolutes, or even those flexible? I mean, can those be changed? So but the idea of Olam Kadmon, saying that the world is first, the world precedes everything else. So that means it's a perspective that the laws of science and nature are absolute fact, irrefutable, they cannot change, that is truth. There could be God also. They're not denying God and saying that, but they're saying God has to fit into the system because the system is 2 + 2 = 4. Nobody can change that. Pi r squared is pi r squared. No one can change that. E = mc². Einstein proves it. No one can change it. That's it. That cannot be changed. So that's one approach. So God may exist, but God has to exist within that system. So God can't make 2 + 2 = 5 either, because 2 + 2 = 4, and that's an absolute fact. The system of nature is immutable, and neither man nor God can change that. So that would be the scientific approach. That would be the approach that we would attribute to the ancient Greeks. And to this very day, that's something that sits with us, as very logical, because it's hard. We can't imagine such a thing that there's a world where these things aren't true. Now, as we mentioned a few weeks back, we said, well, that the problem is that we're seeing it all within our limited bubble. Now, we can't discuss things beyond our world. So our world, those things are true. So in our minds, those things are true. And we have no tools to even research things beyond our world. That's how we explained it a few weeks back. But that's the first approach to nature. And again, it sits well with us, and it makes a lot of sense. But this system is a system which, from the Torah perspective, that is not a true statement. I mean, the Torah perspective is that God created all the laws of nature. We don't say the Olam Kadmon. We don't say the world came first. We say God came first. And the fact that 2 + 2 = 4 is a creation of God, and it's subject to change. The fact that pi r squared is the area of a circle, that's something which could change. That's, God made that rule, and then God could break the rule. And that's, those are rules that are made by God. Someone who makes the rules, that means the rules can change. It's not just an absolute fact. It's not something which is an eternal fact of the world that must be true. It's something which God put into place, which we live with it day in and day out, but it's not something which is irrefutable and eternal. That's the Torah's approach, and we'll talk about that in a few different ways. But the idea of the system as we have it, the idea of this world, the world of nature, the world of science, the world of the laws of science and nature, I would say that corresponds to number 6. And it's based on many sources, because the number 6, God made the world in 6 days and rested on the 7th. But the days where God created the world were the 6 days of creation. Those 6 days are the days where God actually put into place all the laws of science and nature. When God said, "Let there be light," when God said, "Let there be," let there be animals. So God was putting into place the science of these items as well. And during the days of Bereshis, during the days where God was creating the world, those 6 days, all the laws of science and nature put into place. That's system number six. The natural world that we're in is a world that we would associate the number six. It was created by God in 6 days. The Maharal points out that a 3D cube has six faces on it, which indicates that that's the sum total of our physical world. If you want to think about the world, there's six directions: north, south, east, west, up, and down. That's the world that we're in. On a 3D graph, you have three axes going in six different directions, and ultimately, the number six is the sum total of the world, of our physical world. That's how we view the number six. So the scientific mind, or the Greek mind, again, or we'll call it the atheistic scientific mind, or the ancient Greek mind would say, okay, so the world is a world of sixes. That indicates that there's a world here of science and nature that can be detected with our instruments and with our scientific equations and our laws. And those laws that we prove to be in the world are irrefutable. They are eternal, and that is it. It's interesting, the word Yavan, ancient Greece, Yavan, is Gematria 66. Because they're like the ultimate in sixes. Of this world, they are the ultimate. So it's Gematria 66. So that's all. That's the approach. Now, the religious approach is that these laws are true, but they're not irrefutable. They're true because God made them true. And if God chose to change them, they could change. And beyond that, even the human being has an ability to alter nature. And this is the next point I want to make.
So this is seven? The next point is...
No, I'm still on number six. I'm still on six. Because I'm going to show how the idea of Rosh Chodesh actually counteracts their approach to the number six. Right? That's what I'm going to say. Rosh Chodesh... So the Greeks said that we can't observe Rosh Chodesh, which meant not just observance, but we could not declare Rosh Chodesh. It used to be that they would wait until they had witnesses who saw the new moon. When they saw the new moon, they'd come to the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin would then interrogate the witnesses to make sure they really saw a new moon. And once they passed interrogation, the Sanhedrin would declare it's now a new month. That's how it was done. That's how it was done historically until they made an established calendar. But the mitzvah of making Rosh Chodesh was that we would determine when the month began. And the halacha actually is that if the Beis Din decides that they want to not follow the witnesses, or they want to actually adjust the month for whatever reason, even if it doesn't correspond to the moon, they can do that. So for instance, the Beis Din, whether it was on purpose or by accident or by mistake, they declared the month on the wrong day, that declaration is valid, and the month will now begin on that day. So that's a legal idea that the Torah gives, and legally the month begins that day in Torah law. But what's very interesting is the following. Now, Rosh Chodesh essentially is based on the cycles of the moon, which is a natural cycle. It's something which is scientific. It happens to be that Jews knew that calculation long before the rest of the world knew. This is one of the secrets that the Jews had that scientists only came onto in much later history, was knowing the moon, the lunar cycle. The sages had this in the Talmud, and we were able to predict lunar cycles far before scientists could. And then that's a fact. But Torah tells us a very interesting thing. Torah tells us the Rosh Chodesh really depends upon the Beis Din, how they declare it. And whatever they declare goes. So even though it might be going against the actual lunar cycle, they'd be off by a day. But even so, the declaration now takes effect. But there's a very important point which is made. The Talmud Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, says the following thing. I'm not going to get into detail about it. The Jerusalem Talmud says that there are certain physical phenomena that are based upon the month or the years that pass. So for instance, even modern science understands that we have internal clocks in our bodies, and at certain points in our lives, it sets off certain changes or reactions within who we are. So Talmud Yerushalmi says that, let's say you have something in the physical world that's based upon a year passing. Well, Sanhedrin has the right to extend the year. Sanhedrin can declare an extra month, and the year now becomes 30 months instead of 12. Sanhedrin can actually declare an extra day, and a month becomes 30 days instead of 29 days. No, they have that right. So the Talmud Yerushalmi says that even the physical reactions and phenomena, which are based upon months or years passing, that is going to be that's going to depend upon and adapt to what the Beis Din declares. Is that a clear point? That's a little bit of an intricate point here. But they're saying that even things which are supposed to happen based on a physical calendar, months or years passing, and the Beis Din has the right to tweak that calendar, the physical world will adapt to what Beis Din declares. So something is supposed to occur after 3 months, and the Beis Din has now declared that those 3 months should be an extra 2 days because they've added on days to those months. So the physical reaction in nature will only occur once the Beis Din's month pass. If there's something that should occur only after 3 years, but Beis Din has the right to add on in a leap year. They can make extra months. You know, we have sometimes a second Adar. And they declared in during those 3 years there should be a second Adar. So this physical reaction will only occur once the 3 years that the Beis Din declares is passed. So it's not based on the physical world. It's based on Beis Din's declarations. So what this means for us is that even the laws of nature, which we thought were absolute or immutable, they can be determined and tweaked by the human being. That's what Rosh Chodesh teaches us. The idea that the Beis Din can declare Rosh Chodesh, they can declare months and years, that shows that the Jew, the Beis Din, has in their hands to actually change nature. Nature was waiting for 3 years to pass, or 3 months to pass, or 3 days to pass. I don't know if days would make a difference, months or years to pass. And Beis Din has the right to play around those months and years, and nature now will delay and adapt to what Beis Din declares. So the Greek.
The whole problem with Rabbi Yeshua on Yom Kippur.
Yes, we say we go with him no matter what. Even if he's wrong, we go with him. Correct. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah. Correct. Right. So in the number six, the physical world, and the Greeks say that's an absolute. That's not going to change. We can't change. No one can change it. But Rosh Chodesh tells us, what do you mean? Hold on a second. The human being has the ability to actually impact these laws of nature, which you think are immutable. Because if you see how the Beis Din declares their new months, that will actually impact forces of nature. So they decreed against Rosh Chodesh, because Rosh Chodesh was in opposition to their philosophy. So that's number one. That's all the number six. The number six, even in the physical world, we're not even coming on to God intervening. Even the physical world, the human being, the Torah says, has the ability to impact the laws of nature. And that's seen through the idea of Rosh Chodesh. So that's number six. Now number seven obviously corresponds to Shabbos, because they decreed against Shabbos. That's 7 days. In terms of the number seven, what it actually symbolizes. So the Maharal says that, you know, we mentioned before how a cube has six faces. But it's also going to, there's going to be a center point that it all forms around. So the Maharal says that the physical world, if you give it a focal point, you give it a focus, you give it a direction, that's number seven. Because six is the physical world, but that just means the world is here with no direction. If there's some focal point for it to focus on, that's number seven. So you have, for instance, you know, you take your cube, as the image we're giving, and the cube is going to form around something in the middle. And that middle is the focal point.
So is that the axis, basically?
Yeah, that could be the axis, right. Right. So in terms of that, that would mean, unless we'll say it in short, then we'll explain it. If the world is focused around God, that, you know, even though there's a physical world, there's God at the center point, then that shows that the world is bound to God. Shabbos is the seventh day of creation. So there's 6 days God created the world. On the seventh day we rest. Why? Because we must remember that God was the creator. So that shows that it's not, the world is not an absolute. The laws are not an absolute of the world. Rather, there's a God who put them into place. That's what Shabbos represents. When you're sitting back and relaxing on Shabbos, the goal is to show that God rests on the seventh day from creating the world. And the world was created with all these laws in place. God's a creator. So instead of saying the Olam Kadmon, that the world preceded God, rather we say, no, God preceded the world. God made the world as we have it. There's a creator of the world. For 6 days, God made the heavens and the earth. The seventh day, he rested. By Chulah Shemayim, God completed the heavens and the earth. So Shabbos testifies to the fact that Hashem made nature, and nature is subject to God as the focal point. Meaning, in other words, we'll say that, you know, nature is kind of putty in God's hands, as it were. You know, God can change it as he pleases. It's the rules which are there are his rules. And if he wants to come in and intervene in some way, those rules can be suspended or pushed aside. Nature is not eternal or immutable. Only God is. Now, the only thing eternal about this world is God. Everything else could cease to exist. The Torah tells us that time is a creation, which our minds can understand what that means, but time is not absolute. Time is a creation. 2 plus 2 does not have to equal 4. No, in our minds it does. But if God wants to make 2 plus 2 equal 5, we don't understand it, but he could do that too, because that's just a law of nature God put into place. So the Greeks came out against Shabbos as well, because Shabbos shows not only can the human being alter nature, but nature is a creation of God. And as a creation of God, that shows that nature is an absolute, God is absolute. And that, again, that's an opposition to their pure philosophy that nature is an absolute. It's interesting, Chanukah always includes a Shabbos. Chanukah, being that it's 8 days, there'll always be a Shabbos in Chanukah. but it also has Rosh Chodesh always. Chanukah always has Rosh Chodesh and Shabbos in it. And the point is that we're trying to show that they say that the world itself is an eternal, absolute, you know, law, the laws of the world. And we say, no, Shabbos teaches us the opposite. Shabbos tells us that it's merely putty in God's hands, that God put it all into place, God created it, and God could change it as he wishes. And that's the idea of miracles or God coming in and suspending laws of nature to have something else happen. So this view would be viewing the world that the laws of science and nature are in place, but God can step in and change them whenever he wants, because since he put them in place, he made the rules, he can break the rules. That's basically what we would say. And that corresponds to number 7. So that's 6 and that's 7. There's Chodesh and Shabbos. And then you get to number 8. And number 8 really is a deeper approach to nature. So one approach to nature, the Greek approach, is that it's absolute. Then there's the approach, well, even though the laws of nature are in place, human beings have the ability to possibly intervene. Then we say, no, but God made it all, so God can intervene. And now the final, number 8, is the following. And number 8 would tell us that there's really no such thing as nature at all. Nature is just a figment of our imagination, as it were. Let me explain that. Because we ask the question, what's the difference between nature and miracles anyways? That's a question we have to ask in our minds. Isn't the human eye a miracle? Isn't digestion a miracle? Isn't a tree growing from a seed a miracle? Isn't the sun a miracle? I mean, everything that was a miracle. How do you distinguish between something natural and something miraculous? And the answer is very simple. It's just that nature, and this is actually a term that's used in many, many commentaries, nature is just an extended miracle. It's a constant. It's a miracle. The miracles are miraculous because they're not constant. They come in and they leave. Nature is a miracle, but it's a constant miracle, so we call it nature. That's what we call it. But it's all just a matter of labeling it. It's really all the same. You know, there's nothing at this moment that should make 2 plus 2 equals 4 than in the last moment. God has deemed that this should remain equal in 4 every single moment for now, until he changes that. God has deemed that my eyes should be able to see and my body functions as is until he changes that. It's something, even though it's something which we view as natural, it's not natural at all. It's just an extended miracle. It's a miracle which is lasting. And this is the story, I think we spent this a few weeks ago, the famous story of Rav Chanina Mendoza's daughter, who put vinegar into the Shabbos candle instead of oil. And she was all upset, it was too close to Shabbos, she didn't have any oil to put in. He said, what's the big deal? God said that oil can burn, so vinegar can burn too. There's no difference. So she lit it and the vinegar burned. And the candles worked just fine. Because he understood from a very deep level that the oil burning itself is also a miracle. You know, 2 minutes ago God said oil should burn, and he said it 1 minute ago as well, but this minute also said vinegar should burn. Well, there's no difference, you know, it's all God saying how things should work, so as long as you have enough faith in God, so then vinegar can burn. Why should it make any difference at all? The fact that we breathe in oxygen, well, it could have been we breathe in carbon dioxide. That could change. Why does it have to be that way? Why should gravity keep working? Maybe gravity shouldn't keep working. Maybe we should start floating up in a minute. No, because God is constantly deeming that gravity should work. It's a constant basis. I mean, we say every day in davening, "I'm a mechadish b'chol yom v'may sabreshis." Every single day, God renews the acts of creation. There's nothing constant about it. God's always renewing these laws. So there's a viewpoint which is, again, it's a higher level, but the viewpoint that you see that nature and miracles are all the same thing. There's no distinction. So the Greeks say, no, nature is nature and it's absolute. We say nature is nothing, because it's all just God's constant will to make things function. Now you can view nature as nature is a constant and God can come from the outside and intervene. Then you can have a viewpoint where it's not constant at all. That every single moment God is deeming it should work, and if that moment passes, it shouldn't work anymore. So this corresponds to number 8. The number 8 is the number we always view as the one, the supernatural number. If 6 and 7 have to do with creation, 6 the days where God created the world, on the 7th day he rested, 8 is the number which goes beyond creation. And 8 is the number that gives us the supernatural perspective. It shows us that nature is not actually reality, it's all just God's constant miracles. And we say also in the Shemona Esrei, Anisecha shebechol yom imanu, on the miracles which occur daily. So that could mean nature. It's just a daily miracle. That's all it is. So this number of 8, we call the Malam Yateva, it's supernatural. It shows us that the system of nature is really no different than anything else. Now, there's a famous quote from the Ramban, Nachmanides. He says that from the open miracles, and we learn to train ourselves to see the hidden miracles. So when you see God performing miracles, we call open miracles, things that suspend the laws of nature. So then you know, okay, there's a God out there who created these laws. So eventually you come to understand that we're looking constantly at hidden miracles every single day, day in and day out. We're looking at hidden miracles in this world.
Can you give some after you've done with this?
Yeah.
Another one more example
of
where an open miracle we see a hidden miracle.
Well, I'll give it now. I mean, what I mean is that open miracles show you that there's a God in the world.
Right.
You don't see that plain through nature, but once you know there's a God in the world, so then that leads you to understand that nature is also miraculous.
Now
you know that it really it's, as we said, putty in God's hands, and he put it all into place, and then they're able to then see the hidden miracles.
See it. Okay, thank you.
So the number 8 obviously corresponds to the third mitzvah the Greeks decreed against, which is the bris milah, which is done on the 8th day. And the idea of the bris milah, one idea at least, is that the human being lives for something beyond this world. Now, in this world, you can say that the baby's body is complete. And as many, unfortunately, throughout history and even nowadays, many say it's a barbaric practice. How can you go and defile the baby's body? And you know, it's not fair to the baby that you're going to go ahead and cut him. And we say, well, even though from this perspective, the baby's body is complete, and yeah, maybe it's considered in some way defiling his body by doing a bris milah, we say that there's another worldly perspective. And from that other worldly perspective, the baby is not complete. And the baby needs this in order to thrive and to shine as a Jew. So bris milah is showing there's a higher system that makes an imprint in our world, and that shows us that what you see in front of you is not a constant. A nace, a miracle, is merely a different system from a higher world which is coming, being imposed onto our world. But really, it's all miracles. It's just a matter of God's constant will. So the idea of bris milah is to show that this baby is living for something far beyond this world. And what seems to you as natural is really not true. Really, he's living for a supernatural cause. So the 8 days of Chanukah, they're meant to bring to us all these ideas. Chanukah always has 8 days, which corresponds to bris milah. There's always a Shabbos in Chanukah, always Rosh Chodesh in Chanukah, every single year. Because we're coming to counteract the ideas of the Greeks. And the Greeks were telling us that only thing that could be real is that which you see with your own eyes. And this is constant, this is absolute, this is immutable, you cannot change it. And we say that your approach to the world of nature is heresy, it's false. The truth is that nature is a creation of God. It can be altered by human hands, it can be altered by God's hands, it can be altered by, and itself is not constant, because God can change any single moment. And this is the number 8. This is how the number 8 fits into Chanukah. So if we go back to our original question, we said, why is the 8th day of Chanukah, Vezos Chanukah, why is the essence of Chanukah felt through the 8th day? So the answer now, I think, is very, very clear. Because if the whole, one of the major roles of Chanukah is for us to gain perspective on how to view the world of science and nature. So the ideal viewpoint is the viewpoint of number 8. That viewpoint of the fact that nature itself is not natural. God is constantly making sure those laws actually work and are in place. And those can change any single moment. The one who says that the oil should burn can say the vinegar can burn. There's no difference. There's no reason to make any distinctions, because why should nature work as is? And it's funny, because people look at nature as a disproof to God. Look, the world runs on its own. Nature functions. Why do you have to come on to this idea of a God that runs it all? And the question you have to ask these people is, well, who made the laws? Laws are made by somebody. I mentioned, I think, a few weeks ago also, I think Einstein said that the most incomprehensible thing about nature is that it's comprehensible. I mean, it shouldn't make sense. Nature should not make sense. And then why should there be, if the world is created randomly, and it's just a matter of, you know, mutations and explosions and however else things would come about on their own, so why should there be logic? Why should there be laws? Why should things be a constant? It doesn't make any sense. It's only because there's somebody, if there's laws, somebody made the laws. And it's because God made these laws. So, and I'll repeat like I said before, that there's no reason for us to say that, you know, we don't disagree with understanding science and nature. We view that as a very, very important and powerful thing in life. We very much appreciate all the accomplishments that science has brought to us throughout many, many centuries of work. And we'll use them, and we'll respect the complexity of God's world. But the problem is when you divorce it from God. That's the problem. If you look at science as a system on its own and doesn't need God in the picture, so then you're missing the boat. Because the Jewish perspective is that God made science to be a constant so we can live our lives. It's a kindness from God that science works, or else we couldn't do anything. As I've also mentioned before, if today we breathe oxygen and tomorrow we breathe carbon dioxide, if today we eat cookies, and tomorrow we have to eat poison to survive. It won't be poisonous anymore. But if the rules change, so then we wouldn't know what to do with ourselves. Today there's gravity, and tomorrow we're floating around. So do I tie my things down? Do I untie them? What do I do? Today, human beings, our temperature is 98.6, and tomorrow we're going to need to be at 200. So what do we do? If those rules change, we would be in big trouble. So God, in His kindness, gave us a system of nature. But we can never say that system stands alone. That system has to fit into God's picture. So we have 6, 7, and 8. 6 is the number of this world. 6 is a number which shows us that God made the world in 6 days. You have the 6 sides of a cube. You have the 6 directions that we can go in. And that 6 can be taken in 2 ways. Either that, therefore, this world stands alone. Or the Jewish perspective is, no, this world doesn't stand alone. Rosh Chodesh comes to tell us that the human being can actually... it's not absolute. The human being can actually interact with that world and change that world, change the worlds of nature. The number 7 tells us that there's a focal point of it all. The 6 has this focal point, which is Shabbos, which is God, and God put it all into place. And 8 tells us that not only does God put it into place and intervene, but the system, as you think, is so constant, is not constant at all. And really, nature itself is just one constant miracle. So that's our 6, 7, and 8.
8 could also be, the fact that you can have a bris on Chanukah as well.
Yes. Last year. My son was born the first day of Chanukah last year, and has bris on the 8th day.
Oh.
Right? Some of you were actually there, I think. It was, right. That was he was a real Chanukah baby.